Lunch with Leon.
For us, it has been very clear from the very first day when we launched here in the UK that we are here to build the largest intercity coach network.
Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon. And I was really glad to see how much so many of you enjoyed our last episode with Nigel Holness. If you haven't heard it, of course, like all my episodes, they're still all there wherever you get your podcast from. And Nigel's one has been one of our most popular episodes ever, so please make sure you take a listen. Across on my YouTube channel, we have a brand new 40-minute film about Imberbus 2025. Now, if you don't know the full story, Imber Village on Salisbury Plain was taken over by the military in 1943 and never given back. Once a year, the army clears the road so people can visit the only surviving building there, the old church, and also to see the village they've created for training purposes. And the only way to get to Imber Village on this day when it's open every August is by bus and led by my good friend, Peter, Lord Hendy, and of course, a recent podcast guest. Over 40 buses ran the service from Warminster Station across Salisbury Plain through Imber and beyond. We raised some £40,000 for charity. Thanks indeed to all the bus industry professionals and others who gave up their day in order to provide this. If you want to see how it works, do watch the film. Lots of industry stars in it. And if you like the film, please come next year. But today on Lunch with Leon, I'm delighted to talk to the man who's leading the team, creating a new force in coach travel across the UK. I'm talking about Flixbus and their senior managing director here, Andreas Scholling. I started to realise that we had quite a bit in common. And also, I hadn't realised in his career he'd been at Lime.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was at Lime. I had a very interesting experience at Lime. So just, I don't know if everyone's aware of it, but Lime is a San Francisco-based company. So it's a Silicon Valley startup that is now global, is on four or five different continents, and globally the largest micro-mobility player. I had a fantastic experience there. I joined as the second person when they entered Europe. So I, over 6 months' time, we launched 36 cities across Europe. That was a very interesting period.
And you must look back at what they're doing now and think, my goodness, I was part of that when it was much smaller.
Absolutely. And I think I've been somewhat fortunate, but if I look back, I've often joined companies and brands when they were at an early stage and then later on became household names. Here in the UK, I was part of building up Gett, which is now the biggest black cab taxi ride-hailing app. Lime, that's a big micro-mobility player that is across Europe. Flixbus, that's a global platform for travel. I was part of building the biggest e-commerce player in Southeast Asia. Similarly, the biggest one in Africa, Jumia. So it's been, I think it's an experience that I really like. Joining at an early stage when people ask you, what is it that you're doing? And then the same people come back 3-4 years. It's like, but that thing you were doing, is that what now became this? And it's a cool, it's a fun experience.
No, it is indeed. And it's exciting because you're never quite sure where it's going to go. There's no guarantee of success. Yeah. If I think back into one or two things, you might not know, but I was a director at Ola, the Indian rideshare.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And its launch in UK. And we fought very hard to get our license at Ola. And then we went straight into COVID.
And yeah.
So, of course, the business was building nicely. It was building alongside Uber, as you might imagine. Lots of these private hire drivers are on multiple platforms, so that yes, they're playing wall off against each other. But then the owner, wonderful guy, Bhavish Agarwal, extraordinary Indian man, suddenly got the taste for two-wheel EV. So shut down rideshare altogether other than in India. And two-wheel EV overseas is now a big thing. So you never quite know whether you're part of something that's going to be amazing or whether it's going to veer off in a different direction.
Of course. And if I remember correctly, Ola, due to the licensing, and you actually, super interesting if you were part of that, they started outside of London, right? I think they started in Birmingham.
That's right. Well, of course, most private hire operators in this country start in Wolverhampton because the licensing regime is lower there than anywhere
else. Yes, yeah.
And this would have been resolved by the recommendations of the Law Commission. That sadly, those recommendations were in 2014, so we've just celebrated its 11th anniversary of not being enacted. And but of course, in London, the requirement is different, and they had to go through quite a lot of hoops to do it. But look, it's
It's an
amazing.
interesting space, and so I'm fascinated if you've been close to it as well. I saw that if it was yesterday, 2 days ago, the Supreme Court sided with Weezu in terms of allowing private hire vehicle fleets outside of London to remain, what is it called, agents rather than
Yes,
principals,
that's right. That's
which is
right.
interesting.
Of course, the trouble, Andreas, is that the legislation was written in 1998, you know, so it never envisaged the whole thing about rideshare was like your black cab you can hail in the street, but a private hire vehicle have to be booked in advance. The law was never written around it being booked a nanosecond in advance. You know, you pick up your phone, you press the button. The private hire vehicle is just across the street, so you press the button. He says, "Happen," he comes over and picks you up. So that is in advance. And we did in London at one stage consider making an advance booking 10 minutes in advance, but actually, even the politicians said, "No, that's terrible. That's spoiling the consumer service." So even the politicians, you know, were against it.
There you go.
Anyway, so look,
You're
we had an
defining
exciting time,
the
and then you find yourself in Flix, where you're taking on our long-established National Express, which has been in business for 200 years, and
government.
really getting stuck into interurban coach travel here in the UK, on the back of what you've done across in Europe. So, how does all that happen?
No, it's I mean, there's a personal element to that. With Lyme, I moved to Amsterdam. My wife was here in London. I traveled a lot. Now I got to see her. We eventually said it's probably time to be together. Life has a tendency to bring things together. So while we were having those conversations, Flixbus reached out and said they want to launch in the UK and asked if I wanted to lead that. And I found that as a phenomenal opportunity in order to build a new market from scratch and own the strategy of that. So that's how I got into that. Then obviously you could, or you know, they say timing is everything in life,
Yeah, so you decided to launch just before COVID, right?
yeah, exactly. So I joined in October 2019 with the plan of launching in April 2020. And I'm sure you have participated in mobilization projects. When those happens, you are head down, and that's the only thing you focus. I just shut out news and everything, and I started hearing about this virus in China. I'm like, that has nothing to do with me. I just have to focus on this, and obviously that came in and had quite a significant impact on what we did. But as like timing is everything, equally there are a lot of things you can't control. So, following the pandemic, we then launched in April 21, and that clearly, as you say, probably was good that I didn't have extensive experience from the industry, because anyone who I spoke to within the industry said, "You're absolutely mad. There is no way you can compete with National Express. They've been here for 5,200 years. They dominate. They're aggressive. They will not allow you to survive." Luckily, on one end, I mean, I'd already joined, so I was already committed, so it was all heads down. But equally, it depends a bit on your personality. For me, it was just additional motivation. Like, I'm not going to kind of give up on the opportunity of dislodge what has essentially been a monopoly for many decades. So that was interesting. We then launched in April 21. Once again, a bit of a personal anecdote. My daughter was born the 9th of April, 2021, and we launched Flixbus 15th of April, 2021. So combining those two things with a few intense weeks, but that has been quite heartwarming to see that it's almost like two children that are growing up together.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Andreas, because I have one of those. My eldest son was born on the morning we started the trams in Croydon. The trams in Croydon and my eldest son are exactly the same age, and he was born at 7:30 in the morning. By 9:30 in the morning, I was in Croydon. By
Amazing, yeah.
2 o'clock in the afternoon, the trams were running, and I was back in the hospital. And we often laugh about how we know exactly how old the trams in Croydon are because they're same age as him. And you have to be at both, don't you? You have to be. You can't be there.
absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned you have a similar experience, and I think that you might relate. There's a saying that some people talk about work-life balance, and I think the new or modern way of looking at that is work-life harmony.
Oh,
And
Andreas, I am so pleased you said that. It is one of my campaigns that I use at every opportunity, which gets me stop being invited to things. Work-life balance appears to mean that work is not part of life. It's either work or life. Actually, work is part of life. There's sleeping, there's
absolutely.
working, and there's the other bit. So you can't ha it's not work or life. Of course, work is part of your life. And you are the first person ever to have come up with a better phrase, which is work-life harmony, which I'm going to unceremoniously steal and use everywhere, because work is part of my, it's a very important part of my life. It's not everything in my life, but it's a very important part of it. Talking now back to COVID, it does feel to me that when the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, said he could borrow an infinite amount of money so that we could pay everybody 80% of their wages to stay at home, even though COVID is long since over, people got rather like the idea of staying at home, and indeed staying at home for less money. And it's been in many areas quite hard to get people thinking back that, frankly, in order for this country to succeed, we'll all have to work very hard. We may well have to work for longer, like longer in our lives, because we're going to need a phenomenal amount of tax receipts in order to pay all of the costs that an aging population and care and all the rest of it comes to. So as for sitting at home watching the television, if anything, in work-life harmony, we better get the idea, and the young people had better get the idea, we're going to have to work quite hard for quite a long time.
I could not agree more. I'm super happy you pick up on that. And building further on what you're saying, because this is one of my biggest motivation to actually what I do professionally. At some point, I realized that many of us spend the vast majority of our waking time at work. And I think it's essential to live a good and happy life to get out of the mindset that work is something you have to do to survive, and you go to a place where you're miserable, you're unhappy, you don't like your colleagues, you don't like what you do, etc. And you have to just completely flip that around and be absolutely unapologetic of doing something you're passionate about and come to work and step dance to work every day and just love what you're doing, because that then also multiplies. Because if you bring that energy, the people around you will feel that, will absorb it, they will enjoy what they do, and all of a sudden you're on a positive spin rather than kind of. I know some people that, you know, they come to the office on Monday morning, like, oh my God, it's 5 days left to Friday. And I know this is a little bit cheesy perhaps, but I'm rather on Friday saying, oh my God, it's 2 days to Monday, couldn't it be sooner?
Look, you and I are like mind, and I know lots of people are going to feel otherwise. But firstly, I'm a great believer. One of the reasons why I'm still very busy, even though I'm this old, is because I have too many of my contemporaries who retired early, went back to the farm in their late 50s. And their lives just imploded. No sense of purpose. No reason to get up in the morning, get showered, get shaved. No sense of purpose. And guess what? They get sick. Whereas I'm pretty well clear, if you've got a positive frame of mind and your brain is active, well, people do get sick, but I think it's quite a good buffer against it. And what's not to like about working with brilliant people? What's not to like about meeting new people, learning about AI, learning about technology, learning about what brilliant people are doing? And what's not to like about traveling to these places and seeing how it's all working together? And I've said on the show before, in the coffee break at the Queensland University of Technology in Brisbane, this very young man spent 5 minutes teaching me how to use AI to compose, write, and perform songs. And that was in the coffee break. That wasn't even the reason why we were there. And why would you not want to, A, be in Brisbane on a nice sunny day? Why would you not want to be with thousands of brilliant young people fizzing with the electricity, the static of learning, and learning something yourself. It's just that sure beats sitting at home watching the television in the afternoon.
Absolutely. And I think especially, so first of all, I fully agree with people who are active, lean into life, follow what's happening. I cannot give you a mathematical formula for it, but they're just more energetic, happier, healthier. Like you see it over and over again. But then also, especially because you now mentioned AI, we're living in some of the most exciting times that have been for decades. I'm seeing people doing the most amazing things. As you said, someone can teach you in 5 minutes how to compose and perform music using AI. And I don't know if you follow that, but there's a company, a Swedish company actually called Lovable, who now doing 100 million ARR, so annual recurring revenues, after 8 months since they launched. And they just allow people to create products, software products, without coding. It's absolutely insane. Where, and we have some people in our team now that have no software background whatsoever, and they are developing products that we can use in production that looks like you have a professional team behind it with no software experience. They learned it over 2 3 days, and it took them a week to create it.
That's amazing.
It's just going to be such, and that has only been for a year or 2 years, perhaps. Imagine in 5 to 10 years, it's going to be such an explosion of new things that we will be able to do.
It's extraordinary, and I'm fascinated by it because I was in Kuala Lumpur a couple of weeks ago at the Women in Rail for Malaysia. They got me to do the AI segment. So broadly, I was able to stand up and say, in an audience of 450 undergraduates and others, I said they've chosen the oldest person in the room to talk about the newest thing. But of course, it's so important. This is a case of trying to get women into male-dominated industries like the railway, like signalling, like civil engineering, and so on. But of course, the assumption is that it's all about lifting pieces of track and leaning on the crane. But there are some fabulous high-tech jobs in rail, digital signalling. The UK is at the forefront of digital signalling on the rail network. There's planning, there's data management. There are as many high-quality jobs in the rail industry as there are in media and in consultancy and all of those other wonderful areas. And to have 450 young women excited about getting into transport at all and rail in particular is just one of the reasons why I go. It is just a fabulous thing to do.
If I can add one thing there, and if you look historically, and that's when the internet came, that's the industrialization and all major technical revolution, there's always a fear for job displacement. But in every cycle there has been. It's also true that some jobs disappear, but then there's also new jobs that are being created. And I think people are surely, without doubt, entitled to their opinion on whether development is a good or a bad thing. And as with everything, there's pros and cons. But I think if we look historically over the thousands of years that human beings have been kind of building cities and coming together in societies, no one has been able to stop development. Or my personal view is that this will not be the time when we collectively say, no, we're not going to develop AI. We're not going to want to have that as a society. And therefore, I think coming back to what we were discussing before, it's important what state of mind you bring to a question. And yes, there will be some jobs that will disappear, but there will be a lot of new jobs that are being created. And I would rather think of what can I do in the future rather than what am I going to lose out on due to the new things coming.
I agree entirely. And so the last time I looked, your big competitor, Mobico, operating AlixPress, made a thumping great loss. And you are in the market and growing in the UK extensively. You must be really proud of what Flixbus has achieved in the UK.
Pride is a difficult word. I think there's several, or like, there are many things that we've done well. We are not done in any way, or shape, or form. So if I take just a quick step back, for us, it has been very clear from the very first day when we launched here in the UK that we are here to build the largest intercity coach network. And I remember saying this in the very first interview when we were launching, and I'm sure you can imagine the reactions that we received then, and people were the polite people were laughing behind our back, and the more blunt people were laughing in our face. But for us, it's been super clear because we've seen the opportunity, we know what we are capable of, and we see the competitive space. So for us, it's been clear all the time that we are going to achieve what we set out to do. Then anything that's good in life requires effort and requires time. So now we are 4 years into to that journey. There's a few more years, so that we need to stay focused. But yeah, I think what I'm proud of is the team that we brought together, the people. It's a phenomenal group that has a huge passion and dedication. People coming with a smile to the office, and I think what I'm most proud of is we had a lot of fun on building what we've done, obviously without ever lacking the focus on what's ahead of us to do.
So there's another crossover that you might not have registered. So in my first group days, I was the director responsible for trying to transplant the Greyhound model from the US to UK.
Very
Now,
interesting.
as you know, that fell flat on its face. Nevertheless, just before we just write it off, that the crossover is, of course, that you bought Greyhound from First Group back in 2021. And so our Greyhound story is interesting. Greyhound came inside the deal we did for Laidlaw, and in that we got a whole series of yellow school bus contracts, which were very good, some transit management stuff, and Greyhound. It was always our plan in First Group to sell Greyhound on immediately. But sadly, the PLC board fell in love with Greyhound. They thought it was just the most magic brand, because in their minds there were these coaches sweeping across the plains of Central America with a sunset and the sound of music in the background and an orange sky and so on, which isn't quite the Greyhound that we inherited, because firstly, it's no longer a dense network across the United States, is it? It's concentrated on the West Coast and on the East Coast and one or two other bits and pieces in between. Such is the competition with the airlines that actually it's very hard to make money on that basis. Nevertheless, the PLC were convinced we should bring it to the UK. So our nearest crossover is that I tried to start an urban network of coach services against National Express. And it was run by a really great guy, Alex Warner, who's still very active in the industry. You'll see him in Passenger Transport magazine every issue. And he ran Greyhound for us. And he did it in a modern way. His office was the coach. He would simply travel on the coaches and he would work from his laptop. And when he didn't have much work to do, he walked up and down the coach and spoke to the passengers. So he operated from the coach. But it was very hard to make any progress against National Express. The Greyhound branding was beautiful. And unlike FlixBus, where you had to, create a brand, the American Greyhound brand did count for something because it had that romantic, wonderful feel about it. But sadly, even though we tried lots of tricks, including rebranding some of the existing, like Cardiff to Bristol type interurban services as Greyhound to try and, increase the volume, it just did not succeed and we failed. So isn't it funny that there you are who have successfully taken on National Express and created a dense network of urban coach services in the UK did actually buy Greyhound in the US as well. Fabulous coincidence.
Absolutely. There's so many things in life that are circles, and they just come full circle. And then one would love to share our thinking before we entered the market, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it and compare when you entered. So we launched in 2021. During 2020, we had a 3 4 week trial between two lockdowns, but we just had some coaches out running. What we saw was that National Express, as soon as we put something on the road, they instigated a price war. So they dropped their prices to £1. And so those 3 4 weeks were actually incredibly helpful because then we knew the playbook that National Express would play once we actually do the real launch. And then we were preparing for the launch in 21. And then we realized that if we launch one line or two lines, which maybe would have been easiest choice in some aspects, because it requires a bit less investment, you can try out and whatnot. We realized if we do that, they're going to squeeze us out on those lines. So then, and obviously this wasn't easy, but I then built a strong case to the group, so our owners, the Flix Group, saying when we enter, we need to have a national network. We need to go enter the main routes and be able to establish ourselves and not allow National Express to run an entirety of the rest of the network, gathering profits there, and then squeeze us out on those ranges. I think strategically that makes sense, and it's easy to perhaps now, especially in retrospect, seeing that was the right thing. But we have to remember this was during the pandemic. So the Flix Group was doing really well moving into the pandemic. But as all other transportation groups, we lost 90, 95% of our business over 2 weeks. So when we were coming out of that, it was tough getting investments to launch. But I managed to make that case and say, hey, if we just enter on a subset of lines, we're not gonna be able to make any progress, and we need to establish ourselves on a larger scale. Luckily, they agreed, we got the investment, so we've done that. And I think that's what helped us or enabled us to remain in the market. Because when we entered, most people were telling us, hey guys, you're gonna be out by Christmas. I knew that was not the case, but
Right.
it was the, couldn't say, wisdom at that stage. And then we instead launched, and I will have to go back, but 7 or 8 lines covering Northwest, Northeast, West, and South. So we had quite a significant network, and therefore National Express were not really able to achieve kind of that squeezing out. But it'd be interesting. How did you reflect on it when you were entering, and how did that go?
So we did make the fundamental mistake, which was we did start out on one line, which was Portsmouth. And guess what? There was an immediate price war with National Express. Nobody was making any money, but Portsmouth is all we were doing, and we were losing money, whereas National Express was doing loads of other lines and making money on those in order to pay for it. So we didn't have the COVID complication, but we are a walking example of what would most likely have happened to you if you'd started out one line at a time. So I think that totally vindicates your decision and the support from your backers.
And if I may, because I actually think I owe you some gratitude. Because I have to admit that we did to some extent, not like we did study kind of what had happened in the UK market in the past. And we had heard about Greyhound's entry. And we had heard that you entered on one line and then they cut prices, they increased their frequency. And that's kind of what I'm referring to as squeezing out in a way. So I think that was essential for us. So thanks to you having done that, we knew how that plays out and were then able to create a different approach.
So glad we've had this conversation. This is connecting some unconnected timelines in the past, isn't it? Which is really exciting and so on. Look, the coaches look beautiful. The branding is good. You've got this international reputation as well now, which is good. People see FlixBus all over Europe, and therefore, that always adds a bit of credibility, doesn't it? Because people go and stay in the Hilton in Nairobi, thinking they're going to the same Hilton as the ones they see in America. The Hilton in Nairobi is actually run by people from Nairobi, but the brand loyalty is there, so people go there. So you've got brand loyalty now from all of your activities, which people see across Europe. The coaches are very striking. People see them. There's a lot of them, and so on. So I think that now means you've got the credibility, and people are no longer defaulting as they have done for decades now to National Express because they think Victoria Coach Station, they think National Express, and of course, the digital marketing and the online transactions no longer mean you have to go to a travel agent who himself is liable to put you on National Express. And look,
Yeah.
I wish them well because they have a series of difficulties in various parts of the business, and you want businesses like that absolutely to succeed. But you're in there, which I think is tremendous.
That's very kind words, and they appreciate it. And I think, as you say, we do benefit from being a global company. We're now very strong across Europe. But then, as you mentioned, we've acquired Greyhound. So we're very strong in the US. And we have, since a few years, been expanding to the rest of the world. So we're now present in India, in Brazil, in Chile, in Peru. We announced we're going to launch in Australia. So next time you go to Brisbane, you might see the very recognizable green
Yes, I'll be
logo
there in
there.
October, so I look forward to seeing that too. I'm just fascinated how the market has changed because there was a time when coach travel was the province of the poor and the students, but that's no longer the case. I mean, you'll have much more demographic information than we ever had, but it feels to me that coach travel isn't so much the poor relation as it used to be.
Yeah, you're right. And one big development in my mind is that the quality of the coaches, so the product itself, has become so much better over the last decade or two. And I challenge many people who have negative view on coach, and I often ask them, so when was the last time you actually traveled on a coach? And often either they've never traveled or it was decades ago when they were students, for example. Now, I think the funniest comparison is people who have no issue with cramping down into a low-cost airline and flying 5, 6 hours somewhere, and then not wanting to sit 2 to 3 hours on a coach. And I do both. I have no issue with either of them, but whenever I travel by coach, it is more comfortable than a low-cost airline.
Without
Like,
a doubt,
you have
without
a,
a doubt.
yeah, it's much more comfortable. But and that is, I think, the biggest, or should we say, challenge for the coach industry, that there is, especially so in the UK, a very ingrained cultural view of what coach travel is, and maybe more importantly, who travels by coach. And that is more of a almost class question than a comfort and time question. So if we on top add all the challenges that rail, which is often seen as the replacement for coach, all the issues they've been facing over the last few years, and often the quite poor experience that you have without the seats, delays, cancellations, and everything that's happening. So that's where I think also FlixBus have an important role to play, given that we are a new brand, given that we communicate with our customers on other channels, we are able to attract a new demographic, kind of this group that I refer to who had never tried coach. We can bring them onto coach, and often when they try it, they say, well, actually, you know what,
Yes.
this was pretty good, and they are then happy to return. So I think that's without obviously having opinions on what other people are doing, but I think if you're a legacy player or incumbent, you get comfortable with the status quo because that works well for you, and you're not necessarily concerned about how you could double or triple the market size, and what could you do to actually really grow and improve the perception of the product as such.
So there we have it. The future of coach travel is based on quality, it's based on good service, and it's based on really, really thinking about the needs of the consumers and how they want to travel and trying to take it out of where it is in many people's minds in an old-fashioned sort of bargain basement way, because the future clearly for FlixBus is on really good quality and really dynamic activities to make coach travel the pleasure that Andreas and I know it is, but still there's a few hundreds of thousands of people who need to be persuaded. So my guest today has been Andreas Scholling, who is the Senior Managing Director at FlixBus UK. We've had a fabulous conversation, which could have gone on for ages, but we're going to leave it there. Lunch with Leon is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. Please go across to Passenger Transport so you can see everything that's happening in the transport industry. If you're interested to find out more about FlixBus, www.flixbus.com is their website. And as you've heard, Andreas here is part of an exciting expansion of FlixBus globally, which is amazing. Thanks very much for joining. And in particular, Andreas, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Leon. It's been a pleasure.
Lunch with Leon was presented by Leon Daniels. This episode's guest was Andreas Scholling. The program is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine and supported by Stark Communications. Please leave us a rating or a review wherever you get your podcasts from. And why not subscribe so you are first with the next episode?